my guest on the phone for a continuation of our series on Conversations with Remarkable Minds is Professor James Gus Speth, S-P-E-T-H. I gave you his background earlier as one of the true insiders and leaders of the environmental movement for the past 40 years. He is also the author of many books, the last being The Bridge at the Edge of the World, Capitalism, the Environment, and Crossing from Crisis to Stability. And his new article on his website is America the Possible, a Manifesto. And we'll get to that in a few moments. Nice to have you with us again.
Hi, Gary. It's good to be back with you.
Thank you. I'm going to give you a little larger window to answer and address our issues from any of the things I suggest now, and then I'm going to stay quiet and have you address them, all right?
All right.
I'm very concerned that in the United States today, our government and its agencies are not doing the best job at helping confront our environmental, social, economic, and political crises. And as a result, I don't believe that they are politicians in running for office or in the White House or in Congress, are looking at our environment. I believe that the powerful influence of the profit motive is now deflecting their attention and resources, and more is put on the corporate and financial interest rather than what we need as citizens to have a sustainable future. And finally, the way of our lives today, from my personal and subjective position, has been extremely materialistic. Everything is commodified and hence commercialized, and anthropocentric at the expense of dealing with our environmental problems. I believe that we look at economic growth and do not look at whether or not that growth will allow us to have a quality of life that we can do in a more natural way. Could you please address these issues?
Well, that's a big agenda. I think one way to address them is to think about where we now stand as a country when compared with other leading countries. We have let things in the U.S. across a wide front slide to the bottom. If you look at about 20 advanced industrial democracies, and then you look at about 30 key issues that characterize, you know, how well off the people and the environment are, we're at the bottom of the list on almost everything now. The U.S. has the highest poverty rate, it has the greatest inequality of incomes, has the lowest social mobility, it has the lowest score on the index of well-being of children. It has the most discrimination against women. We have a long list of healthcare problems, which you talk about a great deal, and I won't repeat. We have near the lowest scores on math, and we have the highest homicide rate. You mentioned the moment ago the issue of drugs. We have the world's largest criminal inmate population in our criminal institutions. We have the lowest score on the environmental performance index, and the largest ecological footprint per capita, and the list goes on. And so when you have such encompassing problems that go across society, the economy, the environment, our politics, and you mentioned this terrible decision, the Citizen United case that the Supreme Court handed down that's unleashed the super PACs. When you have problems across such a broad front, you have to ask yourself, well, you know, it can't be due to small reasons. There's something fundamentally wrong when the system is failing to deliver across such a wide array of issues. And I think that something is there's something you were pointing to. We live and work in a system that prioritizes growth and profit and power, and it doesn't prioritize people and planet. And while there's a lot of things that we need to do immediately before we can really change the system that we have, we need to begin in earnest now to build a new political economy, a new operating system for our society, not the socialism of the past and certainly not, you know, the variety of consumerist corporate capitalism that we have today, but a really new operating system. So I love the slogan, system change, not climate change. And I think that what that means is that we've got to get serious about a host of issues that aren't really very much on the agenda now. We've got to find ways of dealing with our problems by other than simply trying to raise GDP number and increase the growth rate of GDP. We've got to think about the design of new corporations that can slowly and intentionally replace the type of corporate form that we have today. We've got to shift from Wall Street to Main Street in terms of banking. We've got to do something about this terrible problem of gross inequality in our society. We need new indicators of well-being that look way beyond GDP.
Such as Nepal.
Yeah.
Quality of
good
life.
Good for Bhutan, you know, with their,
Yes. Where their
gross national happiness. And it's beginning to catch on in its own way. And people are doing indexes of well-being that are based on subjective conditions of how people are doing. And you know, we need to focus on the community level. Some great things that are going on in our country today. When nothing good is happening much in Washington, is the great thing that's going on is that a lot of communities are taking up their problems at the local level and integrating social issues and environmental issues and launching transition initiatives at the local level. And the list goes on of things we need to do, but certainly very high on that list, in my judgment now, is something you were getting at, which is pro-democracy political reform. We have really got to move fast to save our democracy from this creeping corporatocracy and creeping plutocracy that is just engulfing our political process as we speak. And you mentioned one idea for doing something about that. My favorite is the legislation. It's actually in the Congress to create a Fair Election Now law, it's called by some. To create a combination of small donor financing and matching and government support at a level that can really make a difference. As long as the court is in the current mind that it's in, we're not going to probably see anything that's going to change the ability of the rich to put a lot of money into politics, but we could build up an alternative path to running a successful campaign through small donor contributions and public financing, and that's a very promising way to go, I think. But it's one of a number of things we need to do to increase the strength of our democracy and to make it a vital citizen sovereignty again. So that's just some reflections on your. On your opening question, I know that a number of the things that I talk about in the article that's in Orion magazine and in the book that I have coming out on these issues in September is called America the Possible: Roadmap to a New Economy. In today's politics, some of these ideas are just not off the table because the right has moved so far and so fast to the right, but the fact is that if we go back to the New Deal and Franklin Roosevelt and the things that were came forward from the New Deal, this basically what I'm urging is going back to extending those ideas and building on that base. For the future. And, we can be a great country. We can stop this decline. We can salvage our democracy. But right now, we've been moving for some decades in the wrong direction. And as I said at the outset, are back in the basement now of the well-to-do OECD countries on almost everything that's important.
I appreciate that overview. Thank you. Two quick questions. They're not immediately connected, but I'm curious. On the one hand, you were a part of the Carter administration and the Clinton transitional administration. You were bringing your background. You were an insider. But then you began to become more critical of some of the policies, including those of some of the administrators. Now, by some measure, you are considered almost a outsider who is an insider. Have you found any personal animus or criticisms towards you because you have, in effect, almost become a whistleblower.
I don't feel that. I do have a little story to tell because I did spend 40 years sort of as, in the sort of progressive establishment, I guess, of our country, and in those working for Carter and in Clinton transition and working in the UN and other things. But when I went to Yale to be the dean of the environment school there, I had a chance to really reflect on where, you know, what was whether we were succeeding environmentally, for example. And as I, you know, looked more deeply at the problems, you know, you can identify the 10 big global scale environmental challenges, and there's only one of them where we're really succeeding. Things look really bad in terms of climate and fisheries and biodiversity and forests and toxics and other problems. And so the further I looked into it, the more I began to doubt that we were tackling these problems in the right way. It wasn't just that we needed more of the same. We needed to do something different. We needed to strike at the root causes of these problems. And at the environmental community, and I'm still part of it, and I'm still on some boards, and I relish my associations, but I think that they are making some mistakes too by not making a political reform a more central part of the agenda, by not engaging more directly in politics and grassroots organizing at the local level, and by not embracing and joining forces with other progressives to deal with these vast inequalities and inequities and injustices in our society. You know, when 40%+ of the families in the country are living on incomes of less than twice the poverty threshold, half the country basically feels economically insecure, you're going to have a hard time making environmental progress in a country like that. And we also need to challenge this growth fetish that we have. Right now, the only way environmentalists have to show that whatever they're going to do to save the planet is going to help the economy. And yet it doesn't really work. The economy is now out of the recession. The GDP is back where it was in early 2008, and yet we still have 15% of the people who can't get full-time real jobs. So growth isn't providing the jobs. We've had tons of growth in the U.S. over the past several decades, and life satisfaction is flatlined. Poverty has mounted, inequality has mounted, jobs fled our borders, and the environment has declined sharply. So growth is not the way to grow. Growth is not the answer. We need to deal more intelligently with these issues rather than just thinking that we can, prime the pump of aggregate GDP growth. It doesn't work.
I have one more question that I think is relevant. In the last 6 months, I've invited some of the foremost environmentalists and sociologists and behavioralists and ethicists, philosophers on this program, many, I'm sure, almost all of whom you have met or know. And without exception, in fact, some very dramatically, have said the following, that they're finally arriving at a point that they do not feel it's possible to reform, even with the best of intentions, our existing political system, but rather they see to start working cooperatively with other people together so that when the inevitable collapse of some of the systems are in place, there will be a transitional period. It will be rough, but at least there will be some new, vital, more humanistic, more ethical, and certainly more equitable systems in place, even if they're informal and don't have the codification of official law, they will have a lot of adherence, like because they're working over the internet, they're working under the radar of the political system. But without exception, they're saying, one of them in particular the other night said, the co-founder of the Gorbachev Foundation and the Wisdom Institute, said, I believe for years that we could reform the existing system. Now I realize that I was naive, that we can't, because it's just too heavily controlled by special interests, and the very people that we're asking to reform are going to make reforms only to the degree that they still have loopholes or advantages that don't fundamentally change anything, but have a nice veneer to them. And he said that he believes that we should be working together, cooperatively, everyone, instead of their own little individual areas, for the day when, in the not-too-far future, when our different systems begin to collapse and when we become even more fascistic, more limiting in our human rights and our right to protest, our right to habeas corpus. He said, if you think you're going to stop that, no one has been able to stop it or even slow it down. And every time we turn around, they're enacting another law that further takes away our rights. He said, they're not going to change this system. They're not going to change any of it. But sooner or later, because they will go to such a degree, so extreme, that they will cause what they have created to collapse on them. And then those who are of a more progressive mind will be able to step in and say, but there are other ways of now going forward. That's their view. They could be right or wrong, in part or whole. Could you give us yours?
Sure. Well, I in the article in Orion and in the book that's coming out in America the Possible in September, I go into this in some length. I try to present what I think is a theory of change, and it resonates with what you said to some degree, but I want to make one big caveat about that in just a moment. Because I think what's going to happen is that as conditions in the country continue to decline, or at best, fester like they are, the system is going to fail to, deliver on its promises and people's expectations, and the system is going to lose legitimacy. On top of that, I regret to say this, but I'm sure that there are going to be crises in environment and in the economy that are going to focus attention on the need for deep change. And in response, I hope and expect that the progressives, which are now very siloed and working on their own issues, will coalesce and find their voice and find their strength and pioneer the development of the alternatives that that we need to build a new political economy. I think demonstrations and protest and nonviolent civil disobedience will increase as this process goes forward. And then at the local level, in particular, we see this happening around the country, the future is coming into view as communities, as different types of corporations are formed and transition towns begin to deal with local problems. And so we see things happening at the local level to kind of represent the future. And those things, when people hit, when the crises begin to thicken, people will look around and see these positive models. So that's sort of what I see as the picture here. Well, but I would just add one thing. Unfortunately, the climate issue is so serious and so fast upon us that we haven't got time to wait on systemic change and transformative change. If we don't find a way to deal with this climate crisis, things can become so nasty and brutish within a fairly short period of time that it could easily become kind of eclipsing other things, just dealing with the effects of climate change.
I would agree with you on that. In fact, last week we had three of the world's leading climatologists on, all professors, who said that four of the 12 tipping points are tipping, nothing we can do about it. Some of the others, we can slow it down. We definitely need to do something, but unfortunately, look how long we've been talking about how the crisis of the environmental issues are upon us, and look at how each administration said they cared about the citizens, but did nothing formative against that. So we have to apply outside pressure with documentaries on environmental issues to force this into the consciousness of the American public, who then can mandate get off your duff and do something, politicians, like putting surge protectors at all our nuclear power plants in case the solar storms coming are as bad as many anticipate, the plants will not melt down. There's a lot we can do. I thank you very much for giving us your time today. As always, you're just a fountain of insight. The America the Possible is the book. And, The Bridge at the Edge of the World is the book. And America the Possible from OrionMagazine.org is the article from Professor James Spath. Thank you very much for being with us again.